Welcome to this telehealth podcast. I'm your host, Mike Patterson. And today we have the privilege of inviting and having Mary Tucker, CEO of UPIC Health. They're doing some interesting things in the world of telehealth. They're a relatively new company. They're in 15 states. They're doing about, I believe I'm correct, about 120,000 connections a month. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Okay. I'll try to be brief. So my name is Mary Tucker. I'm the CEO, as you mentioned, of UPIC Health. UPIC stands for Unified Patient Interaction Center. So 5 years ago, I was working with a national health network. Having left Europe, my former life was in global consumer experience, really linking the front end with the back end and making the experience for the consumers seamless and effortless and happiness-inducing throughout every touch point. I felt that the stakes weren't high enough for me professionally anymore. I had a great job, but I was losing caring for electronics and whether or not they work. And I thought that process I was feeling a little empty inside. So I moved back to the States and I got a job with a large health network. From there, of course, you can't advance anything in any industry without understanding the legislation around it. And at that time, again, this was around beginning of 2011, and the Affordable Care Act was starting to roll out. Landmark legislation had been passed. And, you know, I was just immersing myself in understanding what the challenges of healthcare providers were because it was important for me to understand that in the company I was working for, in the organization I was working for, so I could do a good job. And it was just the ticket in terms of me personally, where I felt this is exactly the high stakes that I was looking for professionally, because in products, it's a product life cycle. In healthcare, it's a lifetime, right? So, and you change. You can't replace yourself if you break, right? You have to actually go to a series of professionals and all of this. So that was very meaningful to be able to, and to kind of have the privilege to get immersed in that. But as I was looking at the Affordable Care Act, I thought, well, gee, there's going to be a lot of consolidation going on, because there has to be, right? And as I was thinking about that consolidation, and I was thinking about the complexities, and I was thinking about, you know, back in 2011, we would read a lot about consumerism entering healthcare. And it was and continues to be perceived, consumerism in healthcare is being perceived as patients are cost shopping, and that's the thing you've got to be aware of. And yes, they're cost shopping, but because their premiums have gone up, they're making decisions based on the insurance landscape now in a post-Affordable Care Act world. But it's not because they're looking for the best deal. And that's I think that was the first tip off that the industry was getting ready to go down a rabbit hole. And, you know, I didn't want, at least in my small little corner of the world of, you know, we talked last time about Horton Hears a Who, in my small little speck that's getting ready to float off of an elephant's nose. In my little speck, I thought, I'm going to start this company and try to bring the common language from consumerism when life product is a lifetime with the operational challenges that healthcare has. So, and has, you know, just in service, has in supply, you know, supply chain, in, I mean, just across the board. And so I decided, all right, well, let's focus on Medicaid population, because those are the ones that are struggling the most. And so we launched this company. Now, when you say We do about 120,000 patient interactions in a month. That's true. It isn't over telebehavioral health. This is a new channel that we've stood up. So I want to just briefly say how we got there. So we said, all right, look, let's take the idea that in contact centers, you could, I mean, frankly, Teladoc is a contact center filled with, instead of customer service professionals, it's filled with doctors, right, who happen to be on their mobile phones and they're scheduled versus, you know, kind of flooding in as a tidal wave like most contact centers. But the need and the demand is the flooding in of the contact centers. So I said, all right, look, let's start our company. Let's use technology to funnel these in an omni-channel platform. There's nothing really new about this in the contact center industry. But we wanted to switch up who was on the other end of the conversation. We wanted to include up to nurses. If a patient calls in and is having a, you know, a serious issue, access isn't just about scheduling an appointment. Healthcare is kind of viewed it as there's access, but access is so much bigger than just scheduling an appointment. So we said we want to be an access channel. It could mean that we schedule an appointment, but it could also mean that we help the patient resolve what he or she is looking for. So we started with two small clients, one in Wisconsin and one here in the Metro Washington area. And we grew sixfold by referral only. So because we were getting great results, everybody in healthcare pretty much uses Press Ganey surveys. Our Press Ganey results were extremely positive and continue to be. We're also helping expose where there's bottlenecks in the chain, because what we call, from our perspective, is the voice of the patient. So we do we use technology to collect a lot of data that other technology companies in this space aren't collecting, because we want to help our clients see this is the level of effort that your patients are going through to receive care from you, both access and receive. And so we work together to streamline these, and the results are very, very positive. Generally, it means that costs stay neutral, but appointments go up, quality goes up, and that's what we're seeing. So we grew. Well, as we were growing, some of that growth, our clients said to us, hey, can you do some of this revenue cycle stuff? Now, revenue cycle is another area that's slightly, I think, in some areas slightly, in some others profoundly, in some others they've got it right. But revenue cycle it's access is a component of revenue cycle, right?
Yep.
Right, because if the access results in an appointment, you want to have a clean claim, otherwise your payments are going to be delayed. And so I wanted to start getting underneath this. And because as I was listening and our client said, "Can you help us with this?" which then got us into where we administered a couple of grants for low-income patients. We work with a lot of Title X centers around the country. And we were getting more into the financial conversation with patients. Well, we needed to be able to see what has the patient had in their deductible. So we stood up our revenue cycle pillar because our clients asked us to. And because we knew that was going to happen. Because everybody in healthcare are incredibly, they're the brightest people in the country, really, I believe it. And there are lots of bright people in this country and around the world. But in healthcare, they're dealing with emergency situations. They're dealing with high emotions. They're dealing with an inundation of technology, right? An inundation when you look at EMRs. So we said, we want to be that partner who is as robust, and we're going to help them with this, and we're going to help them with their operation, because operations is complex and it requires daily care and feeding, minute to minute. So we stood up a revenue cycle. So now we're moving along, and we're doing that. We're identifying bottlenecks and timely payments. We're identifying areas where missed modifiers. So we're doing all this work. But because my job is to listen, that's my job. I have two functions: listen to patients and listen to employees, and help the team affect the changes that both of those stakeholders, who for me are the most important in the world, are realize the changes that they're seeking. So I'm listening to patients, I'm listening to calls, I'm listening to, and I'm hearing some very difficult circumstances about a year and a half ago. And I'm listening to patients as we're qualifying them for certain grants. And they're calling us from homeless shelters. And they're, you know, the despair, you could hear it. And if you're listening intently, and if you're an empath, you can't stop listening and not do something. So I had been talking to a third-party technology provider, because again, this is, as you already pointed out, we're not a technology company in that we're not developing technology, but we are a technology in that we bring in third parties and tell them how they need to configure their technology to make it work. And that we do that as just part of our services every day. But I was looking and saying, how would we leverage the virtual contact center model and fill this gap in counseling resources, mental health resources? And that's what we're doing. So we have a proprietary, and it's very brand new to the industry. Even Teladoc's, they use a company called TalkBox, and TalkBox is now recognizing, we've had a lot of conversations with them, great platform, and they're making the right decisions by integrating with what's called an automated call distribution model. Because that's old, that's 25 years of call center right there. But this is a way that we're going to distribute these volume. Well, they're already aligning with others who do it, but they got to do some configuration. Their video doesn't do it, but ours does. So our video can handle simultaneous, and as they come in, we can manage the volume as it comes in and parcel that volume. In call centers, they call it skills-based routing. So we're going to use that. I'm calling it video skills-based routing. I'm calling it video automated video distribution. We're innovators in this space. We actually helped our client, our technology provider, understand where their technology could be used in healthcare. And now they're now marketing it. And we're thrilled about that because we're the first ones to kind of get this going. So now we're talking to, we've got a contract that's being finalized. I can't say with who, but it's to provide these services in California, in the entire state of California. We're having another conversation with a health network in Colorado to provide these services. And we're advancing in Virginia. We need some legislation changes so that we can actually get reimbursed for this. And some states are a little bit further along than others, but not many are where they are, where they need to be. We have just established a board whereby we're very, very grateful to have the country's foremost behavioral health and addiction legislation and policy expert on our board. So, and we've been very privileged in Virginia. We've got some amazing legislators in Virginia. Jennifer Boysko, who we're supporting to replace Jennifer Wexton. She's engaged with us in helping us with legislation. Cree Deeds, everybody knows his story. And what a generous soul that he has. And he had a conversation with us and me and our that board member that I mentioned, pointing us into directions to help get this going. So we have a lot of support in the state of Virginia, and we're very, 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 very grateful for that. So that's my brief but comprehensive story.
that was wonderful. That was a mouthful. I get a lot of questions when folks contact me that are interested in telehealth, no matter how large or how big their hospital system is. The first thing they ask me is, we want to get into telehealth. What technology should we choose? And what you just described was articulated better than I ever could have done it, as far as, because you start with your use cases and you start with
always. But this is the thing too, that, and God love them. It's like, healthcare is so complicated, and that healthcare providers are now having to be technologists and operations specialists
and MBAs
and MBAs. And it's, it's a tall order. And, you know, I think that's why, you know, I'm on this kind of side mission that I think, you know, Silicon Valley has a day of reckoning approaching them. We all see it happening, right?
Exactly.
And they've got to learn how to be more engaged partners in industries as complicated as healthcare, because there's no such thing in technology as plug and play. There is absolutely no such thing. Everything requires configuration, and configuration requires intention and use cases. And you're exactly right about that. And that takes a big effort, right? Right now, I think healthcare is looking at, I mean, when I say healthcare, you know, it's like, it's on a spectrum in itself, but many in healthcare are looking to say, well, I need to get into telehealth because that's where everybody's going. And that's not a good enough reason. It just isn't. It's, what do you want to do with this? What do you, how do you want it to function? Do you want to do primary care over it? What sort of primary care? Do you want to staff a call center with RNs? Or do you want to schedule appointments for this? There are plenty of providers out there. My favorite platform for scheduled televideo, not random come in when I need you, because that's the UPIC model. But although we're doing scheduling too, because that sometimes works better for others. But for strictly, if you want a doctor event to be scheduled, Mend Family out of Florida has it nailed. I think, and I've seen, a gazillion of them. And these guys really have figured out how to simplify case notes, how to simplify, because it integrates with the EMR. So you can just put it right into the Mend Family platform. It dumps right in.
So you mentioned EMR. So does UPIC integrate with EHRs, any particular EHRs? And or what are your thoughts on EHR integration?
So I love that question. Are you talking about interoperability, or are you talking about integration?
Actually, both.
Okay.
Because they have to, yeah.
Okay. So here's my view. Nothing is integrated. Okay. And we shouldn't expect it to be. These are third parties that are competing with each other. And to expect them to share goodies goes against our free market. And we shouldn't ask them to. We should put a layer in between them that funnels the communication, because then that layer, there are so many technology systems out there that can help with this. And I'll answer your question about I don't integrate, because I don't have to. And we'll talk about this in a second. But what I would love to see in the industry is, you've got the EMR at the bottom. You've got the communication system on top of that. Okay. And communication system is video, it's phone, it's email, it's portal, it's anything. Right? Like anything,
exactly.
It's web, it's chat, anything that communicates, it's two-way. You put that thing on top, and then there are technologies that can, it's almost like a cartilage layer, right? It holds all the communication, and it can choose what it wants to funnel into which EMR. And everything could happen at the communication layer. I am predicting in the future, we will see interactive portals. I would like to see interactive portals. I have had a conversation with one of our clients where I said, look, patients are doing stuff online, then they're hanging up and calling me. And now I'm doing the tough stuff. Why don't we put my video link and online? So if they have a question, they can click on the link. Let's meet them where they are. All doable, all being scoped right now. I wouldn't necessarily have a counselor on the other end. I would have one of my front end access and revenue cycle folks, because they can answer the questions about what they can expect, how to prepare for the visit, whatever questions they have. But let's meet them where they are and get them off the phone. Let's remove burdens from the patient. They're already burdened by their own body, right? So So I think the future will be interactive portals. I really do. And if they're not, you heard it here first. I keep pushing this. There's no reason for us to keep layering technologies on and keep and trying to push competitors to play on the same, to share. It's not realistic. It goes against our free market.
So we're getting out a little bit of the scope, but I want to segue into something.
Sorry.
But in your opinion, should healthcare be profit, for profit, or not for profit? Delivery of healthcare. Not, I'm not talking about the vendors that are making the widgets and
healthcare. Health. This is exactly why I'm standing up a nonprofit pillar at UPIC, because in my humble opinion, and I don't think I'm alone in this, health for profit healthcare means keep me sick. I have to be sick. I have to be a patient in order for them to make money. And the sicker I am, the more money they make, which is why I think they struggle against the Affordable Care Act. Because the Affordable Care Act has those quality components in there that in the value-based reimbursement that is, for me, contrary to for-profit healthcare. There's nothing that burns me up more than when I see a hospital advertising and saying, come to us, and this is how great it is to come to us. Actually, you're a hospital. Under all conditions, it sucks to come to you. So embrace that, know it, and focus on, we get it. That's why when you come here, we're going to make you well. And we're going to keep you well. That goes against for-profit, one person's opinion. I think lots of people would agree with me, and there are probably lots of people who wouldn't. But I do agree with the for-profit organizations around it, around healthcare. But again, we have to recognize that we're in a different animal in healthcare. Tech providers have to recognize that this isn't just slap your widget on a website and have a chat bot tell, you know what I mean? That's not what healthcare is about. So they have to embrace that as well in their for-profit models.
Exactly. I got a question from one of our listeners about the provider getting paid.
Yeah.
And they say that insurance is value-based, not fee-based. And yeah, how, if the provider's getting paid or how they're getting paid.
Well, so is this individual in a provider?
Yeah, no, not a provider.
Not a provider. Yeah. So in the value-based reimbursement scheme, and man, this is going to be like as high level as it's going to be because there's so many. It's a complicated.
We all have our parachutes on. It's okay. Huh? I said we all have our parachutes on. It's okay.
We could literally be here for a week talking about just that issue. So what's happening with providers, and we're seeing this on the revenue cycle side. So in value-based reimbursement, it requires that you get well. And it really started with hospitals, right? And so there are lots of laws, there are lots of processes that hospitals have to submit to that assure that their reimbursement levels are as high as they can be, because there is a correction at the end of each year. And that just went into effect. So the correction is what they're trying to avoid. That if, there's a lot of data that's showing health networks are doing a lot better with this than some of these independent hospitals and things like this. But the provider gets paid in the old reimbursement model. You would go to the doctor would submit a claim, the doctor would get paid on the claim, and you would come back a month later, same symptoms, still not well, write you another prescription, try something else, do another test, submit that claim, get paid. Those days are over. If the doctor prescribes you something and says, this is what's wrong with you, and you leave, and you come back a month later, there will be and you have the same symptoms, same problem. There's a potential that there will be a correction that provider has to submit to. Or it could be that the claim is denied and they have to go in and adjudicate. I don't know of too many instances where the claim would be denied, but probably not reimbursed at the fullest percentage, and then the doctors have to write off the rest or attempt to collect from the patient. which is, you know, its own challenge depending on the patient population. So this is why we're seeing so many primary care doctors drop out, right? We have a serious shortfall in primary care doctors. There's some buzz about whether primary care is even necessary, that you could technically get primary care at CVS now at the pharmacy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. With kiosk. They're
kiosk. Exactly. So then the burden becomes, because the Affordable Care Act requires that before you see a specialist, you have to get a referral from your primary care. It's going to be interesting to see how that changes over the years. It'll take forever for it to change, but it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. So, but it's a good question. It's a complicated question. And in the end, it's, how do they get paid? Well, they get paid if you get well.
Exactly.
And it's just that simple. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Another question, are they getting paid for primary care? And the answer is depends. Yes. Depending on the state and where they are.
Yeah.
Let's segue into a little, because I want to talk a little bit more about your company. One thing I noticed that your motto, I love your motto, be happy, be awesome, and help others with one and two.
Yeah.
So you guys started off with women's health.
Yes.
So could you speak to that a little bit? Talk around women's health and that, and I know you're moving out into other arenas.
We're definitely expanding. Women's health is its own, unique specialty, right? But those who are in women's health would argue that family planning and reproductive health is primary care, and I agree. You know, a lot of, you know, stigmatization around sexual and reproductive health in this country has created a lot of sick people because they don't seek care when they need care. And it looks, some of the symptoms of sexually transmitted, I mean, we have a sexually transmitted disease epidemic in this country right now. Not many people know that because they, you know, we don't like to talk about it, but a lot of the symptoms from sexual and transmitted diseases can present as a flu. And if you go to primary care and primary care doctor is not trained to check for the sexually transmitted disease, you could end up being treated for flu and then have a really, really serious set of circumstances as you progressed. So family planning and reproductive health is critical in this country. I believe it's primary care. And we did start with clients in that space.
And before you go on, so if one of your clients called, or your call center, you would educate them and on how to go back to their primary care doctor, how to interface with their healthcare professionals?
No, we would actually facilitate their care with the clients that we support that provide services. So, but we would, first we might do some triage. You know, we have something that, it goes back to, because I appreciate that you tied it into our mantra, one, be happy, two, be awesome, three, help others with one and two. Because there's such stigma around sexual and reproductive health, and because of our approach in our communication center, I don't call them call centers anymore. That has a connotation of something that we're just not. We're a part of it, but we leverage the best practices of it. But anyway, we have to decode what the patient is talking about sometimes, because they're so afraid to use the words. They're filled with such shame they can't say that they actually are sexually active. There are smarter people out there in the world who are really doing a lot to try to deal with this problem. Because if they don't talk about it, it can just domino into all kinds of things, particularly the younger the patient, right? So when you think about safety, this is something that, you know, we struggle, Julie and I struggle with a lot when talking about this current administration is very anti women's health. And we would love to invite, I would love to invite a listening session for some of our phone calls that we handle and some of the communications that we engage with patients sitting in the Oval Office with President Trump. I promise he would change his heart and mind if he could hear, you know, what we're hearing and what we support every day with these clients. So part of being happy and being awesome and helping others with that is it acknowledges the personal commitment that we have to ourselves and to everybody around us as human beings. how you view your day is a choice. How you react to certain situations is a choice, right? And what we promote in the organization, we're in a complicated world. We employ a lot of women. For example, I have an employee whose husband was a truck driver and he committed suicide in his cab last week. It shot himself in the head while he was on traveling across the country with his load. We are who we serve in that this now employee has a despair issue. And we were talking about her husband. She didn't realize that this was going on. He had been having troubles with his truck. It had been breaking down and money was getting tight. This man was in an episode of despair. Well, we all are at some given point. We all know despair, right? We're conditioned by our country to not admit it, right? And not raise our hand and say, I need help. And our mantra is giving license to saying, I need help. And having that permeate throughout the organization, having us be here to say, my mission in life is to help you. And when we're each saying that to each other and we approach every single patient that's coming in that we can hear is struggling or crying or scared, any number of things, and be in control of our own emotions in order to serve them. And hopefully it'll continue to cascade. And that's our mission.
That's awesome. And to your point, I was talking to a physician several weeks ago who said in his practice, he has a number of patients that are suicidal. We're talking about technology and being able to connect before the fact. The majority of his patients, he said, if they could hang on just 2 more weeks, it would have been okay. Just 2 weeks. So,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was in New York last week and I was at this function and there was a woman there who had run for office. She didn't win, but she had run for office down in Florida. And we were talking about this because, you know, I think I mentioned this to you. My goal, I have so many goals in life, but a big one on this one is to get rid of hotlines. A hotline is the last thing a person needs when they're at a tipping point. What they need is not to be placed on hold. And what happened with this woman was she had a college roommate who was suicidal and she called one of those hotlines and was placed on hold. And ended up just disconnecting and dealing with it herself, getting her to the infirmary at the college and all this kind of stuff. But this is the thing that we're here to fix. This is the innovation that we're bringing, disruption, I think. Innovation is it's not mine. I borrowed the technology that was already developed, but it was being used for recruiters. I pulled it in into healthcare. So it wasn't mine to innovate there, but my goal really is to upend this hotline business because we've got, you know, the points of despair have multiplied with the individuals in this country who have fallen victim to opioid crisis, but even those who haven't. I mean, that's today's label, opioid crisis. But, you know, alcoholism has been around forever. Drug addiction has been around forever. I think we're just surprised that opioid addiction has now hit white collar. Do you know what I mean? But guess what? Those same folks are doing cocaine on kitchen counters. You know, I mean, we've got a problem and hotlines don't help. Hotlines put a barrier. It's another access problem. I want them to connect to the person they need.
I'm going
to
ask a couple more questions. I'd love to continue with this one, but in the essence of time, your technology and your call center or connected centers, excuse me.
Thank you.
They're secure, they're HIPAA compliant.
They are. We're all on the Amazon network with all of the firewalls and hoops. But
so
that being said,
AWS, Amazon Web Services.
So correct. I do not store any PHI on my network. We access our clients' systems, our clients' EMRs, and we do that through connected secure tunnels between our two networks that are password driven. And
here's a scenario I just thought of. Let's say I had 10 rural health centers, 20 rural health centers, 50.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I contacted you and I said, hey, I have all these rural health centers in Virginia, Maryland, wherever.
Yeah.
I need your help.
Yep.
So how long would it take to get, and I know it's a little open-ended, but how long would it take to get this clinic up and running with your services? Just one clinic.
3 weeks. And those 3 weeks are largely around technology and workflows. And we have a national healthcare staffing partner who does all of our recruiting for us.
Pricing?
Well, so you're getting into, so we can reimburse for this right. work. So we do have one model that we're finalizing. It's which is fine with us. We were told what we would be reimbursed for. We built our model around it. And then this company is really the payer. And then they're going to submit claims for their reimbursement. But because our revenue cycle team is already in place, our intention ultimately is to be credentialed. But as we're standing this up, we've, like I said, we've got these contracts that we're being paid for it. And it's for me, it's about what the reimbursement schedule looks like within within the state and Medicaid. There are little things that our team have been able to help some identify missed modifiers. So because folks are leaving a lot of money on the table. So we would work with this client or partner of ours to over those 3 weeks to kind of hammer out those details. Because the resource is the resource, you know, the technology is the technology. Then it just becomes what's the reimbursement scheme.
So in conclusion, you painted a great picture of UPIC Healthcare and your vision, at least what's happening right now. Where would you see it in the next 5 years?
You know, that's a really great question. I think we're going to grow very, very, very rapidly in the counseling space. And I think that's where we're going to see, you know, we've got these three pillars. Although right now we've got a lot of traction on revenue cycle. If I were a betting woman, I would say in 5 years' time, my mix of patient interaction across the country, we are really best suited for networks or local organizations who could create a network. So for example, like a federally qualified health center in a rural area with a hospital, with a pharmacy, we could be the communication layer in that community. I'd like to see us there. That's always been our vision because we know that we can solve a lot of the value-based reimbursement issues, that the gotchas in the lack of care coordination in these disparate systems. But in 5 years' time, we'll be 70% counseling, I think. 20%, well, maybe 60% counseling, 30% revenue cycle, and the rest access type, but most of that's going to be moved online. And I think that's where we're going to shift.
Hey, I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Me too.
You certainly have a passion for counseling and getting the message out there. So is there one final comment you'd like to make before we say
no, goodbye? I just really appreciate the time. You know, we've had a couple conversations now, and you know how I could just spend the rest of my life talking about this stuff. The final comment that I would say for anybody who's listening or is save your money on consultants. I'm just going to say this. I hate to say it, but I have to say it. Save your money on consultants and go figure out from your patient's point of view where your bottlenecks are, because consultants are being paid tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and they're coming to your call centers, your contact centers to get data, and that's all they're doing. And all it takes is just a little effort to put an ear to the ground and listen to your patient. Choose one workflow, one thing that your patients have to go through, and pretend to be that patient and go through it. And that will determine where you need to focus in the next year. And you'll save, you'll be heroes. You'll save millions within your organization. You'll know exactly what you want your technology to do, and you'll document that, and you'll go to your tech vendors and say, do this. And everybody's happier.
Exactly. That was millions of dollars worth of information in the last 30 seconds. So Mary, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And good luck. And I'll talk to you soon.